Hey everyone, welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I'm Timothy Styles, and with me is my tag team partner, Cutthroat Cody Hancock.
That is I, sir. Hello.
And today, let's see. If you are on Instagram, follow us on Instagram at Turnbuckle Boogie. Cutthroat Cody is on there as well as Cutthroat Cody. And I quickly want to mention, and I don't like spending any time mentioning stuff like this on the show, but I feel that I have to. Something has happened with our iTunes feed that I can't understand. I've reached out to Apple and I have yet to receive a response. So I'm waiting to figure things out there. So if you're listening to this going, yeah, I normally subscribe on Apple and all of a sudden the feed stopped with last a couple episodes ago, I'm working on it. If it comes down to it, I might have to resubmit the show. You would have to resubscribe. Maybe we'll see. I'll keep everyone informed. Anything you want to mention, Cody?
I mean, there's other platforms to find us on anchor.fm/turnbuckleboogie.
Well, that is where the show is hosted. That's yes. That's of ill importance. Whatever your platform is, it should be there, with the exception of it's on pause with Apple right now. But anything concerning you, you need to.
No, man, I think we can just jump into it today.
Perfect. Let's boogie. So, yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Another one bites the dust.
Yes, unfortunately so. Rest in peace to the original gangsta, New Jack.
Yeah, man. Boy, there's a lot of opinions about New Jack. So, a lot good, some bad, you know. Where do you stand? Obviously, you're a guy who came into the industry in the hopes of being something of a deathmatch guy,
or yes,
you know, being sort of romanticizing CZW, and you know, he's the king of the mountain, probably.
Well, New Jack for sure. And if you want to talk about probably one of the most controversial figures in professional wrestling history, even before ECW, his debut for Smoky Mountain. And the promo where he shouted out O.J. Simpson, basically said, two less we have to worry about. You know, he had the voice of somebody that, like, rattled the cage. And as far as his later work in ECW went, I mean, just the whole entire concept of having your music play throughout the entire match.
I would consider that his later work. I would consider that right in the middle of his career.
Yeah.
You know, that was the apex. You know, his Smoky Mountain stuff, you know, him causing, you know, essentially race riots.
Yeah, man.
In Kentucky and, you know, wherever. That would be, you know, an early on stuff. And then the later stuff, you would probably say like XPW and all of his
yes.
indie work. And that was really kind of bottom of the barrel stuff. XPW, I really recognized. ECW, even though it was this hardcore thing and it had, you know, it was had extreme in the name and all this sort of stuff. It was put on by people within the professional wrestling industry who regardless of their, you know, Shane Douglas's comments about Ric Flair and the, you know, all that stuff, had a lot of reverence and respect for the history of it. XPW was put on by a porn producer,
Rob Black,
right, and a bunch of nobodies.
Yes,
I mean just. People in South Los Angeles with no credits to their name and who tried to get over on the trend.
And some of them ended up going on to be successful.
Correct.
Joey Chaos, for instance, was originally an XPW guy and he went on to form Santino Brothers, which is considered to be one of the top wrestling schools in the United States. WWE will send people to go work at Santino's before they get brought on. Ronda Rousey trained at Santino's before she was being brought into WWE and things of that nature. But I do agree with what you're saying.
Did you hold XPW show? They were on par. If you remember, a lot of my memory during that time is based around WoW magazine.
Yes.
And, you know, in the magazine, it was like ECW was this exciting thing that was happening, even when it, the last 6 months where the news was oftentimes bad, like, you know, yeah. Paul Heyman isn't even at this show and stuff like that. So, but they were still of major importance to the insider of professional wrestlers.
Absolutely. Or,
all the fans and stuff. The WWE was probably closely behind that, you know, with even though they were starting to fall off with the heat from Stone Cold kind of dying off. The Rock is starting to go do, the Scorpion King and shit like this. But way down from there.
Yes.
Was WCW. All the news on WCW and the few times they would mention XPW.
And I even remember, I mean, also a really ballsy move, if anybody remembers Heatwave 2000, which actually took place, I believe, in the Cow Palace.
Mm-hmm.
XPW basically bought a bunch of front row seats.
Right.
And they caused a ruckus. And
they, I remember Taz running out there.
Yeah, man.
And being absolutely livid. Like, I mean, obviously, the entire locker room emptied, and I think just blew those motherfuckers out. Just
yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. You're not hijacking our show.
And it would have been interesting to see what would have happened if ECW sticked around and if XPW had stuck around, because I also even went to see the first time I went to Philly was for CZW Best of the Best Four, and I went as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got a ticket for a plane,
yes,
to fly across the country to go see CZW
twice.
Wow.
And the ECW arena. You have to remember that what I wanted to do,
mm-hmm,
is I wanted to wrestle for ECW.
Right. Well, who didn't? I did too.
ECW folded.
Right.
And in its place came a company that tried following the same formula, and they ran out of the same building. Right. You know, to this day, like, one of my goals is to wrestle in the ECW arena. The status of the building is always currently changing. Like, they get new business owners and they'll try to get wrestling out and then they'll bring wrestling back in, yada, yada, yada. But right. XPW actually ended up running, I believe, two shows out of the ECW arena, and the CZW fans would hijack that show, and they spray painted on the side of the building, XPW get out. Right. Like, so there was something.
Well, there, I mean, it's very Bird versus Johnson-esque, and, you know, Lakers and Celtics.
Yes.
There is a big fuck you.
Yeah,
that is going on with ECW fans, and rightfully so. Like I said, they tried to hijack their shit,
yeah, man,
just to get over. And it's like, no. It's like, do you remember, it was maybe like a year, a little over a year. Actually, it was pre-pandemic that the WWE was having, I think, a pay-per-view. And then just out of nowhere, what's his face? Enzo Amore,
yes,
just
sir,
stands up on his chair. He had bought a ticket and came in with the Groucho glasses on.
Yep. Yep. The Groucho Marx glasses with the mustache, and they actually let him through. And
yeah. And then he stands up on his seat and starts doing his bit.
Yep.
And fucking security tackled him.
Yeah, man.
And told him to get, that's just not how you do business.
It's not how you do business. However, to me, there is something admirable about rattling the cage.
Sure.
And sometimes it works. Like, I mean, look at CM Punk. Like, when CM Punk was given a live microphone to air his grievances about WWE, that was a very professional way.
Also a work
of rattling the cage. There was shooty elements in it. It wasn't a complete shoot, though, for sure, because he got clearance to do so.
Sure.
And it, like I said, I don't think that that's
but
anything
one was
that
company
I would do.
One was company requested, and
yes,
what we're talking about is not.
Not at all. And
you know
if
I mean?
Any,
these
and
are
if anything,
two very different things. You can look. I don't think this makes me a traditionalist. I think if you want to get over with your talent.
Yes.
You know, you can be a bottom feeder and try to, you know, oh, there's something very popular, you know, going on. I'll go in there and do a little guerrilla marketing.
Yep.
But ultimately, it could work in the opposite of your favor.
Yeah.
Because it can make you look absolutely pathetic, and it made XPW look pathetic.
It did, and it also made Enzo Amore look pathetic. You know, right.
Because look, think about this. Because Enzo Amore, quite honestly, my opinions of him are wildly different than everybody else's. I think that dude was great.
Yeah.
I thought he was great for their company. Unfortunately, when someone is that gifted on a microphone or is that exuberant of a personality, the thing that makes them exuberant also makes them obnoxious. Yes. in person.
Yes.
You know, so
1,000%.
They're quick to get rid of them.
Yep.
Innocence be damned.
Right.
You know, so yeah, he's going to be that person who, you know, does that. And sadly, yeah, it made him look pathetic because they wouldn't embrace it and go, well, at least he's got some balls. They were like, fuck him. And,
right.
You know, he could fuck off forever.
And he's probably most likely going to be fucked off forever. And every now and again, there's going to be an indie promotion that's going to bring him in and things of that nature.
Right.
And I think that that's something that going back to kind of trying to get back to a little bit of just the transition, though, between ECW and then going past ECW. And then there was a specific instance that happened with New Jack, was the Danbury Fall, right? And the Danbury Fall,
specifically was this?
It was ECW, I believe, Living Dangerously. I can't remember what year, but it was Vic Grimes and New Jack.
Oh, and yeah, yeah. The scaffold. Yeah, yeah.
So if you go and look at the time frame of Beyond the Mat.
Why was it called the Danbury Fall?
Because it was in Danbury, New Jersey.
Oh, I see. Because yeah. I consider it the Vic Grimes incident.
Yeah. So
part one, by the way. There was part two.
There was two parts. But if you go and watch Beyond the Mat and you look at New Jack and Beyond the Mat.
Yeah.
And he's talking entirely differently. Like he's still from the streets. Right.
Sure.
However, he was in a little bit more control. He was taking a movie audition.
Man, that, you know? I mean, that is one of the weirdest scenes or just scenarios, because it wasn't a scene. It was a scenario where this straight up old school G wrestler who's known for just gigging people.
Yep.
I mean, it would be like if Abdullah the Butcher was like going for an audition for a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
You know,
which I mean,
if Abdullah the Butcher was a straight up G.
Yes, sir.
And it was weird. And it was also it wasn't eye opening, because we all know this without really knowing anything. The insincerity and bullshittiness of the casting directors.
Agent, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I think he's really got something there. Yeah. You will never hire this motherfucker. He has got gig marks all over his fucking head.
Yep.
You know, I think he could be Denzel's friend. Are you high?
But he was at least somewhat.
That's how you know Hollywood is that entire system.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit.
Yeah, man. And it's 1,000%. And they're not going to, sometimes you're not going to get honesty, which also keeps you exactly where you are. Because if you're honest with somebody while you're not hiring them, then you give them the opportunity to fix that and possibly be hired somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem like anything that they want to give you, which is a shame. But that's all. There's been people in wrestling industry like that too. But if you go and you watch Beyond the Mat, then watch the Danbury Fall, and then look at any interview that New Jack had after that incident with Vic Grimes, the first one, you can tell that.
Well, he's had a major head trauma.
And you can tell he was never the same person. And he was already kind of nuts, right?
He lived dangerously throughout his youth.
Yes.
And then had a very specific take that on pro wrestling that was enabled by Paul Heyman.
Yes.
To draw.
And it did.
And at the same time abused, abused drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
In an impressive fashion, and, supposedly, you know.
And the head injury on top of that and then you have a head, make it
Yeah, and then you have better. A head injury. But I wouldn't pinpoint the head injury as it being, well, that's a specific moment. Bro, you cannot do... I used to have this friend growing up. I grew up poor. Wrong side of Boulder Highway, as I like to say.
There we go.
There was this friend pre... methamphetamines and post-methamphetamines.
Oh, no.
Post-methamphetamines, and I specifically am saying meth, we refer to him as the Jell-O Man. And I can't animate it on a podcast because it's a visual thing. But basically, he never stopped moving. I'll do it for you. Yeah, just like, he was like wobbly. He was constantly in motion.
Harry Carey.
Yes, yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
He was very Harry Carey-ish, although Harry Carey is a little jittery. He was just constantly, like, if I just remember my memories of him were, like, just to go out and smoke back in the days when I would smoke. He'd come out and, like, he'd just be bending over at the waist and just kind of moving around. I mean, there's a lot of movies where people do this pretty well.
Yeah.
But,
so, there's something about Mary comes to mind when the dude that's pretending to be crippled drops his keys.
I was probably
and is trying to go down to pick up his keys.
I was thinking more of like Clockers or
there you go.
Something.
Fuck, so, I haven't
something
heard about
by Spike Lee. I almost said Spike Jones.
A Crusher and I feel nude. We feel undressed. We can't stand it. We feel like we've lost our coat. We feel that we've lost the greatest thing we ever had, the world's heavyweight championship tag team belts. Now, we're right here. We're going to get our title back. We're going to get our belts back. We're going to beat the bums that stole our belts. We're going to get anybody that's in our way. We're not going to rest until we get our championship belts back. Come in here, Crusher, and show them.
That's right. When me and Bruiser were champions, we were on Waikakuki Beach, watching the dollies in the bikini suits walk by on the Waikiki Beach. Well, we haven't taken a vacation since then. We've been in the saloons fighting. We've been in the alleys fighting. And we're not going to stop fighting until we get them belts back. We don't care where it is, whether it is in the alley, in a saloon, any place we catch them bums. We send the one bum to the hospital when they want that title. We're going to send them all to the hospital. I've never been so mad in my life, and I know you ain't either, Bruiser. Even the beer's starting to taste bitter.
It's starting to taste warm, and it's going to be a warm day. It's going to be a cold day. We're going to fight each other if we have to, but we're going to win our championships back sooner or later, and it better be sooner. So anybody that's in our way, we're going to...
All right, brother, I got to have something. I'm mad we gotta fight somebody. If we don't fight them, we gotta fight each other. No. We'll fight the bronze. We'll fight everybody. But let's fight.
What sissy shirt on anyway? Yes.
Why
take that
why,
shirt. Take that shirt.
I'll tell you what. Don't tell me. Hey, man, in there.
I haven't heard Clockers in a long time.
Yeah, but bro, you cannot just willy-nilly do hard drugs for a lengthy period of time and have it not. Look, I've got friends who drank a lot and it affects their not their intelligence but their quickness.
No, it absolutely does. It affects a lot of things, man.
And if you abuse something pretty intensely for stretches of time, it changes your, you know, it'd be like if you just started wearing underwear that was way too tight today. Mm-hmm. In 3 years you'd have a muffin top.
Yep.
Regardless of whether you were fucking fat or skinny, you know what I mean? Your body adapts to whatever you're doing if you do it consistently enough. And hard drugs will, alcohol will fuck you up.
Yep.
So.
And so, like, New Jack went from, you had the mass transit incident, which was a specific instance where the kid openly requested to be cut by New Jack.
Right.
Right? And New Jack was mad at him, so he went really hard.
Let's say this. He's a kid. He's an idiot. But big ups to anyone like, hey, it'd be great if we got some color. Why don't you fucking shiv me up or whatever?
Yeah.
Once again, Abdullah the Butcher. If I had a match with Abdullah the Butcher, I'd go, hey, can you maybe not use the fucking fork tonight?
Yeah. And
so this fucking fat kid, like, yeah, go, why don't you go ahead and open me up? Like, bro, you're asking for it.
Yeah. And
literally.
And 1,000%. And who knows what would have happened. I'm sure that Jack would have really fucked him up in the match, but he may have not stabbed him with a fucking X-Acto blade.
Right.
Right. So at least my theory. But then you go, and then after the head trauma, you then have the instance where he stabbed a guy with an X-Acto blade 14 times in a match.
Yeah.
And was just sticking him.
I think that was after Vic Grimes part two.
It was. It was way after. And it was very much in...
I mean, that was like the end.
Yeah.
Because he was doing an indie show in front of no one.
Yep.
Yeah, and he had slashed this dude up. Good yep. grief.
And it's something, too, the incident with Gypsy Joe. When Gypsy Joe, who's like in his 70s at the time or whatever it was, is still taking garbage match bookings, mm-hmm. and him and Jack got in a spat, and then Gypsy Joe stopped selling. Jack's like, all right, well, I'm just going to hit you in the head with an aluminum baseball bat,
right.
and then I'm going to make you fucking sell. And I think that wrapping all of it up, it makes me really curious to see if ECW would have went to a further extent with the violence. Because you had, like, think about, they had barbed wire, mm-hmm. right? And they would use barbed wire from time to time. There was a period of time where they got freaked out by it, but then they used it in a little bit of a way.
Right.
They used fire. Same thing. They got freaked out about it with one instance, and then they stopped and they started doing it again. You had tables.
Well, people, look, I was old enough at the time. You were obviously younger than I was. That people forget that they weaned off of a lot of
they
that
did.
Stuff in their last year or two.
Yes.
And just started running as a promotion that did some stuff. Like, you'd get a Van Damminator, you know, right. where, you know, a guy's going to catch a chair in the face
even
in a very reckless way.
I remember the feud with C.W. Anderson, Tommy Dreamer. They used razor wire.
Right.
Like, and that was a match that happened later on. And it just makes me curious because I do.
Well, no. I had a point I was going to lead into.
Go ahead.
People forget that they were moving away from that stuff. I think they had hit an apex and they realized, all right, like, at what point does this violence get sort of out of control?
Right.
And look, I'm not to put thoughts in Paul Dangerously's head or anything, but, you know, he has a roster to not only attempt to pay.
yeah.
But he also take care of so that they can make future shows.
Yeah.
You know, they're really fucking themselves up a lot.
Yeah.
And pushing themselves. And that sort of stuff can lead to hard drugs and you know, to numb the pain and stuff like that. And whether by hook or by crook, they started to wean off of it and they started to lean towards their draws. You know,
yeah.
Rob Van Dam was a major draw for them.
Yes.
I mean, a big time one. Even Sabu.
Yep.
I mean, they had a lot of draws. The Dudley Boys were a big draw. Taz, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Right? That's why when people go, why do you hate CZW? As if anyone asked me that question.
Right.
I'm making this up. It's like, because they seem to take steps backwards. You know, in the WWE even, right? They were the PG forever. And then to compete, they sort of opened the floodgates.
TVMA.
Right. Yeah. Everybody, you know, let's do stuff to compete. So they ratcheted it up. And it got to a point where it became so much, all the garbage stuff that they were doing. I remember reading, once again, another WoW magazine thing where the word was, they are going to kind of leave that stuff behind and move towards a more wrestling specific product.
And they were also on national television too. So
right.
with the TNN deal. So, and that's another thing.
But no, but the point is it wasn't necessarily because of that. The point
right.
was, is, you know, the industry itself is this, you know, flowing trend. And unfortunately one company sort of sets the trend, or at that time ECW was setting the trend. They jack it and, you know, whatever. ECW weaned off of a lot of the deathmatch elements. WWE tended to follow suit. And then when CZW came around, it was like steps backwards. Like, yeah, we're doing all the super extreme shit.
Right.
That, quite honestly, I mean, you know, like one of our earlier episodes on Sick Nick Mondo, I ended up watching a lot of CZW. And a lot of this shit was fucking, to me, was like really like, wow, good grief. Like, I wonder what these people are being paid. Because it cannot be enough to handle one doctor bill from the amount of damage some of these kids. That's what a lot of them were. It's like Zandig and a bunch of kids really fucking themselves up.
Yeah. And I mean,
which was the point why they probably weaned away from that. There's a comes a new company and they take it. They not only do they bring it back up, they do it worse.
Yeah. And that was a thing too, is that it becomes a, can you top this? Can you top that?
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, you end up having people that are taking bumps on hypothermic needles.
Yeah.
And you know, it's one of those things that I'll say this. I think that New Jack would have had a very different life if that incident never happened with him and Vic Grimes.
Part
one. I think that he would have had a very different life.
Let's say, I think he broke his skull. Happened?
He, like, there's an interview where he talks about how he had spinal fluid leaking out of his ears.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's
insane. For the young people who are listening who don't know, I mean, early on in ECW, he started jumping off of higher and higher platforms.
Yeah.
He'd go into a building and go, where can I jump off of? And some of these things got to be, you know, 30, 40 feet. Imagine, you know, going up on your two-story house. I got a three-story house. Go up on the roof of your two-story house and then splashing off.
Yeah.
And landing on, I don't know, a beanbag.
You can still feel impact.
Oh, bro.
Yeah, man.
First of all, people think concussions are, they don't fully understand what concussions are.
No.
It's your brain is bruised because it slaps against the inside of your skull in a rapid fashion.
That could happen. You don't have to get hit in the head for a concussion to happen.
No, you can just be traveling at terminal velocity and come to a complete stop.
Yep.
That's all it takes.
And that's also, I think that I'm very thankful for the concussion protocols that have been taking place after incidents.
Right.
Because honestly, that's anytime you take a bump, you know,
right.
Like they're, the last 2 days for me, training, we went really hard in training on Thursday. And then I had that second match, in the best of three series with R&B last night. I'm rocked.
Yeah.
Like I,
when you told me like, hey, we can't record our normal time, 'cause I got a match I'm doing. It's part two of this,
best of three series.
Best of three series.
Yes.
With R&B, which is, Sugar, help me out.
Sugar Brown and
Clutch.
Yes, Big Money Clutch.
Big Money Clutch. Sorry. I remember them by their old gimmick.
Yes.
I was like, oh boy. The next day, I don't know how much of a mood you're going to be to talk. You probably want to say here with an ice bucket over your head.
I would put it on my knee and my sternum, if anything. But I.
What happened last night? Not to change the subject.
We went really hard.
You went hard in the paint.
Yes. It was, you know, the show.
By the way, I was at the first match of this three. And afterwards, I sent you a text message that said, you look like Bobby Gibson out there.
Yep.
And you texted me back, who's Bobby Gibson?
Well, I'm thinking Robert Gibson.
Well, that's what I said.
Bobby, yeah. But like for me, like.
Because you sold your ass off for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I think you got thrown into the set or something.
Yeah.
And then you proceeded to be beat up for a very good stretch of time.
Yep. So, and last night.
Because I always thought of you as the Ricky Morton of the two.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I really like between Jake and I is that we can switch.
Right.
You know, like we can switch.
Yeah.
And
I mean, yeah, very easy. Because you're both really likable in a sense that, you know, he's the, you know, the kick pad wearing faster paced, you know.
Jacob Austin Young is the legs of Death Proof.
Right.
And I'm the upper body.
That's a great metaphor.
Yes.
Bro, hold on. Let me get my camera. We're going to cut a promo right now.
He's the legs. I'm the upper body.
I'd like to introduce to you right now the one, the only, the wrestler who made Milwaukee famous and wrestling famous, the Crusher. Crusher, good
to
see you.
That's right. Roll out the barrel. A lot of people are going to mistake me for Johnny Cash. But I'm not Johnny Cash. I'm the Crusher.
And the one and the only. And boy, oh boy, I'll tell you. Why don't you tell the folks how in the world you got started in wrestling? What prompted you to get into wrestling, Crusher?
Well, I come from the other side of the tracks. My old man ran a working man's saloon. And at 13 years old, he said, kid, you've been laying around enough. Come on down to the saloon. I want you to start throwing drunks out of the saloon. So since 13 years old, I've been fighting. I went to a college, but the College of Hard Knocks.
Well, I'll tell you, you've been in the streets, as you say. I know you've trained very hard. Who has influenced you in your career as a wrestler the most of anyone that you can think of right now?
Well, nobody really influenced me, I don't think, any more than the drunks I threw out of the saloon, my old man making me get in the streets and fight. I'll never forget one time when I was a punk kid. I had to take a can of beer and go to the saloon and get my old man some beer. Well, he gave me 15 cents to go get it. And about 10 minutes later, I come running down the hill, almost blew him right off the porch. And he said, hey, punk, where you going? Get over here, you bum. He said, where's my beer? He thought I drank his beer. But I didn't drink his beer. I said, there's some bum, 350 pounds. I only weighed about 200 when I was 13 years old. Took one of the fight. What took my beer away, the money from the beer? He said, kid, it ain't the size of the dog in a fight. It's the size of the fight in a dog. Get back up that hill, get that money back, and you bring that beer back down to me. Well, I've been climbing that hill ever since. I went up there, beat the big bum, got my 15 cents back, and brought my own man his beer back.
Well, I'll tell you.
Does that put a tear in your eye or what?
Just a wee bit, Crusher.
It's a sentimental story.
Oh, that's it. Yes, it is.
About 2 o'clock in the morning when they're closing the bars, it really gets sentimental.
Yeah, they certainly do. You never know what the people are up to.
But yeah, you proceeded to get beat up. And like I said, if the guy's the legs historically is probably the guy who's probably going to take the beating. But you did. And I thought, oh, well, that's strange, but whatever.
Well, and that last night we both kind of took it a little bit, but then we kind of gave it back. It was I got busted open within the first couple seconds.
Not to break kayfabe, I don't see anything on you. You look fine.
It was my nose. Oh, well, I mean, if you look, there's one there.
Well, let me turn on the light.
Yeah, you can see it if you turn on the light. There's
oh Jesus Christ.
One there, and then there's one around here actually a swollen type thing.
Yeah, normally I do this podcast by candlelight, folks. So I like to make it intimate.
We do have to make it very intimate, and I appreciate it. We light some incense, and then
That's right.
Just ease into it.
Put some peppermint in the air and just fucking relax.
Absolutely. And I will say, so this show is available on Fight TV. It's $14.99.
From yesterday?
Yes.
With Leo Rush and
Leo Rush, Trey Miguel, Jordan Oliver, Hammerstone was there. There was some really, it was honestly from top to bottom one of the best cards that we have had.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully now in Nevada.
And I've seen some great FSW cards.
This was the $15 is worth it, man. It's called FSW Changing the Game. I highly recommend watching it.
Yeah, and you get to see Cody in his natural habitat.
Yes.
A wrestling ring.
And
instead of talking on a microphone.
We're 1-1. Now, right. So, and then,
well, who could have saw that coming?
Well, yes. Well, I mean, we had to fight for it. And leading into the third match, we're doing our anniversary show for 2 dates. So there's going to be 2 dates coming up soon. And I think that we're finalizing a venue. Mm-hmm. So there may be a strong possibility that it might not be taking place at the FSW arena.
Right.
We'll see what happens. You know, it's rumor mill right now, but going into that third and final match.
Can I interject before you get into the third match? Tell me about the second match.
So the second match, I was able to pull out a fancy sunset flip on clutch to beat him after, like, we beat the brakes off each other, man.
Wow,
like,
a sunset flip.
A sunset flip.
You know, I don't know why wrestlers scoff at small packages and roll-ups and schoolboys and sunset flips as pinning predicaments. It's like, why not?
I think because there was a period of time. It was really popular in the early 2000s for independent wrestling for people to give each other pile drivers and power bombs and top rope hurricane ranas and Phoenix splashes and all these things that could put a match away. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden there's like a little tiny pin that happens out of nowhere for the 1-2-3. I've seen it happen in matches. There's one specifically off the top of my head with Trent Acid versus Homicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of both of them, especially right. Homicide. And they had weapons in a match and things like that, and they were killing each other.
Right.
I think there was a diamond cutter off the top rope to the outside through a table.
So necessary.
Yes. And then they finished with like a schoolboy. And it's like, man, you could have probably just went home after you guys killed yourselves.
Or at that point, why not do one big move that ends in the ring and then just the winner puts his foot on the, you know, not quite Chris Jericho style.
Yeah.
But foot on the chest. Like, I got it. This motherfucker's dead.
And that's something that you, like I said, there was just that period of time. And I think that kind of gave it a bad taste in people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
Moving past that, then you have the current era of WWE.
Christ, are you choking on chicken wings over there?
Yeah, my apologies. Not chicken wings. Just, I don't know what happened with that. My apologies. But you have these matches that are really short TV time-wise. Like, you're talking about some of these matches go 5, sometimes 7 minutes.
Right.
And it seems like that's, like, the auxiliary exit plan. It's like, oh, we got this. Just like, just plug it in. We got it. And we're going to be fine. And I think that that's something that if momentum is swinging in a favor,
right?
Like, a match can be won by pinfall, submission, knockout, count out, or referee stoppage.
Right.
And that's a thing to me that, especially in a day and age where finishers aren't finishers anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't even specifically have a finish, per se. I have the headlock driver, right, which I use as – I've put a lot of people away with that. If I'm not
able – Do you get tired of it?
No. I don't get tired of that one because –
Because as time goes on, you know, your identity becomes wrapped up in this, you know, one move. And, you know, we've seen it in the industry some moves become popular, like the Canadian Destroyer is very popular only recently.
Yes. And it fell out of popularity, but now it's back in popularity.
Right.
Same thing with Superkick.
Right.
Same thing with the Shining Wizard.
But the point is, you know, probably when you were like, I'm going to do this, you know, what do you call it?
I call it the ambulance chaser.
But it's a forward DDT where you get a guy in a headlock and just go forward.
Yes.
Am I saying that right?
Yes. And so I got the idea for the move because there was a gentleman on the Indies, and I think that he was a guy out of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Tommy Tresnick. And Tommy Tresnick did a lot of cool moves.
Right.
And he had a move called the bus driver. And it was essentially a headlock DDT, but it had an overly complicated setup. It required having the person in a wrist lock and then stepping through with the wrist lock and then having their arm trapped within your leg. And then you get the head and then you go.
Right.
And I'm like, I want to find a way to make that quicker. Streamlined. Right. Yeah. Like, and then I also want to try to find a way to make it my own. And then I started doing it, and I was really excited about it. The only problem with it was is that Sammy Callahan started doing the move.
Yeah, he sure did. And yes. And by the way, John Moxley for a stretch.
And also EC3 utilizes the move as well. And I believe Matt Taven in Ring of Honor started doing the move. But I found a way to do it my way.
Right.
Like, and I was close to letting it go, but then I'm like, man, I'm not going to let this go. Like, right. I put work in to try to modify this in a way to make it unique to me. And
well, why not have, since you're not, you know, Hammerstone size or draw, why not just have a whole string of signatures are finishers, essentially.
I absolutely do. So
you got a crossface.
I have the crossface. I have the Anaconda device.
Right.
I also have a pump handle powerbomb variation.
Hold on. All right. Let's think about this.
Yeah.
From the point of view of a video gamer.
Yes.
I have been waiting for a break in the conversation to say something completely different, but I got to squeeze this in.
Yes.
Because I've been playing. I hate to say this into a microphone because it's so marky. I've been playing Fire Pro Wrestling on my PlayStation 4.
Welcome to the club, brother.
Fire Pro
Club for life.
And by playing it, what I mean is I've created, because it's a game where you can just let it play itself.
Yes, sir.
And you can just enjoy it. So I've created a league where I use the Ring of Honor ring and the Ring of Honor title. And I've drafted a whole series.
Are you fantasy booking?
Yeah, no.
I'm fucking with you.
No, I'm fantasy booking, except for that I'm not deciding who goes over because I'm not playing. Yes. I'm letting the computer fight itself.
Yes.
So I just have it on while I'm doing work down here. But so it's like all the great talent, a male only, unfortunately. Sorry, folks. I just don't have the time to do a whole bunch of fucking intergender shit.
Yeah, man.
But so it's like Kevin Steen and Will Ospreay. And then you're in there.
Yes. I beat you.
Yeah, you did. And
with a crossface.
And then, yes, Timothy Styles. And I stole James Mattern's nickname for my own nickname in this particular game. The Sin City Cobra.
Yes.
Timothy Styles.
Yes.
Big up to James Mattern. But I forgot why. Oh, okay. Here's the reason why I brought this up. When you are creating a character in this game or any wrestling game, right? You pick out your basic moves. Does he do a, you know, what, when you hit the X button, does he do a punch or does he do a chop?
Yes.
Or does he do a knife edge chop?
Yep.
You know, or does he throw a low kick?
Right? Yes.
Then you have your like medium style moves, you know, then you get into like the grappling moves. When you do the grapple motion, is he going to do a suplex?
Is it a stalling suplex or a snap suplex?
Is he going to do a backdrop? Is he going to do a German suplex? These are all the things that you have to choose. And then eventually you get kind of down towards the end of the list where you're choosing all these moves and you get to like signature moves and finisher, right?
Yes.
And in some games, you can have multiple finishers.
Yes.
Right. But let's think of it like this. Forget the term finisher. Let's just say you have a whole series of signature moves.
Yes.
It would behoove of you to have a checklist. You want a submission that deals with the neck, one with the arm, and one with the legs.
Yes.
You want your power move signature, whether it's a high angle German suplex, the point is if you have two signature moves that are submissions that are both on the same body part, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. This is why I brought up this whole long story.
Right.
Is because you're doing the Anaconda Vice.
Right. Well,
and
technically
Anaconda
Vice, when it's applied properly, is an arm hold.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a problem, and there's a reason why the Anaconda Vice really hasn't caught on with the entire industry, and even I think CM Punk really stopped doing it for a good stretch of time.
Right.
I don't think that the move reads.
Right.
You know what I mean? To the average audience member, they see a guy get down. Folks, Google it so I don't have to fucking explain this. But essentially, you wrap the guy's
arm
up.
It's a neck and arm choke.
Yeah, it's a neck and arm crank is what it is. And I think to the average audience member, it looks less of an arm crank and more of a neck crank.
Right. And I have used it.
And by the way, the crossface, it could also be misconstrued as a neck and arm crank. That's why I say.
Yeah.
Pick one of those and then figure out a submission based around the legs.
Well, I have one. Okay. Right? And I haven't debuted it yet. So.
Oh, I see. I'm breaking kayfabe. No, well, you're getting ahead of the game.
Yeah, you're not breaking anything. I'm just telling you, like, as far as that goes, for me, my offense is normally based around the head and the neck.
Right.
Head, neck, and arm.
Sure.
So, Anaconda Vice, Crossface, Headlock DDT.
Right. Forearms.
I use forearms, neck breakers. Right. I've recently started using the flying headbutt.
But wouldn't it be like a good challenge to yourself to go, okay, I need to diversify my portfolio.
Oh, 1,000%.
And, you know, say, look, you could be booked in a guy who, you know, tweaked his knee a couple of matches ago. And he comes to you and goes, well, I got this actual injury. You can work around that.
Right.
And if you don't have shit to do it, well, then you know, if you're just.
Yeah. Doing no. That and stuff. That's why you got to be a Swiss Army knife, man. Right. Like, and that's the thing is that I know.
We talked about last week, The Miz catching the leg and dropping and giving essentially a stunner to someone's knee and pulling or on their ankle and pulling down on their knee, causing leg damage to prepare for a figure four.
Yes, or a single leg Boston Crab or a Indian Deathlock. And that's the thing is that I've got a lot of tricks in my bag because I don't like the idea that wrestling matches can only end when you hit your finisher.
Right.
And I also don't like the idea that people use their finishers and don't finish matches with it. Right. I'm a competitor.
Right.
Right. If I'm able to work somebody's leg over, I can possibly tap them out with a variety of different holds.
Right.
And if they are bigger than me, I'm most likely going to have to use. That's the reason why I used a variation of the sunset flip last night.
Right.
Is because Clutch is much bigger than me.
Right.
I had to use momentum against him.
But also, I mean, is it good for the commentators to be able to tell your story, even if you hit them up before the show and go, hey, look, we're going to do a deal where, you know, the story is he's much bigger than me. My goal is to take him out at the knees, you know, and then it's all a bunch of knee and ankle work and stuff like that, you know,
and
it's a good story to tell. And it's another, as opposed to just going, I'm going to go blunt force trauma, forearms and elbows into the skull. It's a more logical story to tell, especially against a guy who, I don't know how much more he weighs than you. He's got to be, which one? Clutch?
Clutch.
He's
got to be heavier than me.
60 at least pounds.
Much heavier than me. And that's the thing too, though, is that I believe in, if it's a competition and if you're well-rounded enough,
right.
I will, however, I typically go for the ambulance chaser every match.
No one thinks of the commentators. No one thinks of the commentators when they're naming their moves. Like, my move, it's called the fucking dick grabber.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to say dick grabber.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is that I think that some people get really upset when you don't know the names of all their moves.
Yeah.
And that's why most of my moves are very basic. If I do a snap suplex, I don't need to name the snap suplex something different.
If I do a crossface chicken wing, that's enough.
Yes, it's a crossface chicken wing. And then
Anaconda Vice is a perfect name.
Yes, because the whole entire idea around the move is asphyxiation or things of that nature. Like you said, it can work as a head and arm crank.
Mm-hmm.
the real version of the move is an arm splitter. Like, it's like a bicep splitter. And it's very painful. Very painful.
I wonder, here's a thought that creeped over my head. Anaconda Vice. We've all seen the normal setup of it where one guy is laying essentially in the side position of the other.
Yes.
can you do that move to somebody where you roll them over on their front?
It's possible.
Like,
yeah.
Can you start the move in that way? I'm trying to give you it'd be a cool thing to do. You start on front and you're selling. Come on, motherfucker, tap yep. out.
And then they roll over.
And they're not giving up. And then you either they try to escape it and roll the wrong way, or you just flip them
yep.
and crank it even more. Good way to end a match if they could bend that way.
There's a possibility that there might be something there, but I know of some reversals for it, and I also know of some reversals for reversals.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that I've been working on lately, is like how to reverse a reversal.
You know what you never see?
Hmm.
Something sleeper holdish, rear naked, chokish, cross-faced chicken wing, where a guy is face down on the mat. You never see that.
You don't. And I think that the reason why,
I can tell you, I put somebody to sleep like that.
Yes. I think that one of the main reasons why is because there's such an emphasis on camera work.
Right.
Like, even when I was being trained, it was like, show your fucking face.
Right. Sell to the back.
Yeah.
The back row. All right. It was just a thought I had.
I think it's possible. If you work anything.
And not only do you think it, I know it's possible. Like I say, I had a guy on the corner of Tropicana and Nellis.
There it is.
Waiting for the bus.
You've told me this story before, but you haven't told the
listeners. No, I'm not going to tell the whole story. Essentially, me and a complete stranger got into the weirdest fight that I've ever had. He threw a punch and he missed. I hooked his arm and I essentially put him in the kata hajime.
Yep.
And we were face up and he tried to roll and I just rolled over and I was face down on top of him.
Yeah.
You know, he was face down on the sidewalk.
Yep.
And I was on top of him in the, you know, similar position and triangle hold. He was going nowhere and he just went limp and I rolled his carcass into the bushes and that was that. Anyway, I understand what you're saying. You want to show people's the face.
Yeah.
And for the back row.
And this is something too, though. Like I said, it's something to work on. I've actually worked, it was an idea I tried to give to somebody that they didn't take, but like you said, doing a sleeper from instead of my belly to your back, belly to belly, doing a sleeper hold like that
mm-hmm.
just to drop them down.
So face to face.
Yes.
Standing?
Standing. And then eventually work them down.
That's interesting. Maybe they want to do it because it's a little homoerotic.
Well, man, we are literally wearing underwear and touching each other.
Yeah.
It does not get much more homoerotic than that.
Yeah, but normally it's a belly to back.
Yes.
This one is tip to tip, if you get my drift.
Well, I mean, it depends on which way you
view things. This is docking.
Yeah, this is docking.
Frank, Jim Barnett on line 2, Australia, and the Crusher and the Bruiser are here to see you. Well, either you're not Prince Charming or I'm not the good fairy.
Try me.
Sorry. Did anybody ever tell you that you were very physical?
Is that good?
Not bad.
See, I told you she liked me the best.
Okay, Mr. Barnett, I'll take those dates down now. Yes, and the 21st. Okay, thank you.
To what do we owe this honor?
Look, Crush, he's dead and he's still walking.
That's right.
Well, this is all I needed this morning. What do these gentlemen want, Debbie?
Would you believe tickets, passports, and a visa to Japan?
Possibly. I slightly remember arranging something for them there. You guys leaving today?
Yeah, we're going to leave in about 3 hours, but right now we're going down and work out.
Why don't you come with us, Frank? You look like you could use a workout and steam bath.
No, no workout. But a steam bath sounds pretty good. You go on ahead, though. I got something else to do first. I'll meet you there.
Okay, here's everything you need but your jock straps.
We're gonna leave now, Frank, because we can't top that.
I think you better go.
You know, if she was a lady wrestler, we'd all be in trouble.
But, hey, can I tell a thing?
Yes.
Because this, before I lose this thought, as we were talking earlier about people not wanting to lose to a small package of things of that nature, I had a dream recently. basically, the reason why I bring it up is because no one wants to lose this stuff because they don't want to look weak or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that begging off it needs to come back, although I'll tell you. It'd be cool if a couple people did it.
Nick Bugatti,
right,
is the quintessential chicken shit heel.
If MJF was a fucking giant pussy, I think I would like him more.
Yeah,
you know, if he were in situations where, oh, I know I'm fucked. It's so great. It works, even though the crowd knows what's going on, they still get in. They still pop like a motherfucker when you got a guy cornered and he knows he's fucked and he goes, oh, please.
Right. And here's the thing too, though, is that it's a very real thing that happens to people.
My entire youth.
Yeah. People know what that feels like when they have somebody that's being an asshole. And then when you finally step up to them and then they're like, oh, please don't.
Right.
Like, and then they tried to fucking deflect accountability. And it's like, no, man, I'm holding you accountable for your fucking actions.
I had this dream. I was having a match with Walter.
Oh, no.
I think what had happened is I'd listened. This had happened within the last week. I'd listened to an interview with Walter and Corey Graves, which was very good, by the way. I encourage people to check it out on his WWE podcast or whatever. So I had this dream with Walter. And apparently in my mind, because this is what is conveyed in the dream. If I were a professional wrestler, super cocky, very Ric Flair-esque, you know, fucking just full of himself. And then Walter comes out. And there's a quick exchange. And then Walter throws the first wild chop, which happens in every match. Every match, though, people take it and they try to toughen up for it. And in my dream, here's what happened. He rears back and boom, you can hear it across the, I think it was actually, it's funny when you try to analyze your own dreams.
Yeah.
I think it was actually like the ECW arena
or
it was
even
a place
better.
That looked just like it.
Even better.
He hits me and I don't sell at all. I essentially go into shock.
Yep.
I'm just completely pale face and just stand there seemingly for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like registering like, oh no.
Yeah.
I'm fucked because this match has only begun.
Yep.
And this was just the first salvo.
Yep.
And it's like 30 seconds of me standing there before he, you know, when you hit a motherfucker and you stay that way,
mm-hmm.
you know, like bow and you stay in that position.
Yep.
Where you followed through. And then you finally stand and turn.
Yep.
Yeah. He stands and turns. And I essentially, I don't sell for that entire time. I'm just registering on my face like,
Yeah. Because when you're actually in pain.
Yeah. You go into shock.
Yeah. You know, it's.
Here's the second part.
Go ahead.
I'll say it and then it'll be the end.
Yeah.
At that point, he just stared at me in this dream scenario. And I still never sold. I just got down on, you know, knees into the prone position and rolled out of the ring. Like,
yeah,
fuck this.
Yep.
Anyway, I was so, it was so funny that I remembered it because it's like, I haven't seen someone do something like that in such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I've ever seen anyone react to something so devastating like that, but that would probably be my real life. You know, even if it wasn't like a knockout punch, if it was just one of those monster chops that draws blood.
Yep.
I would probably react in that way. Just go, well, fuck this.
Yeah, man.
If this is how this shit's going to go, yep. I would rather lose.
Yeah. And I think that that's, if I remember correctly, there is a match on Nitro with Chris Kanyon and Benoit. And you see Benoit put Kanyon in the corner, and then you can hear Kanyon said, "I thought we said we were going to chop each other." Like you can, like actually hear him, and then he gets chopped on, and Kanyon, I think, actually fucking took a powder. He's like, "Nope, I don't want to get chopped no more."
Yeah, I wouldn't. There's a lot of stuff from Chris Benoit I probably wouldn't be interested in taking.
Yeah, man. And the, so last night talking about when you're actually in pain, so near-death experiences, you'll pop up on your feet and then you're like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. And right. you'll walk around like nothing ever happened, even though you nearly just fucking broke your neck. Right. Case in point, there was a Halloween Havoc with, I believe it was Jado or Gato versus Jericho. And it was the last time that Jericho did the Jericho Spike, which was the standing on the top rope. Other person stands on the top rope, Hurricane Rana. Mm-hmm. As opposed to opponent sitting and right. then you second rope,
yeah.
he nearly killed himself. And Jericho popped up like nothing was wrong. And then there's other times where you'll get hit so hard that you will freeze up. There was...
Oh, I got a story for each one of these situations.
Yeah. In the match that we had with RMB, there was a moment where I took a drop toehold on the second rope. And I don't know if it was because I did chest really heavy the day before, but man, I was in fucking pain. My sternum was hurting so bad. Like even going to bed last night, man, I'm like, dude, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go to sleep
right?
because it was in so much pain, but thankfully I was able to, and it feels a lot better today, but man, it was, and there was a period in the match where for myself to critique myself, there was moments where I should have been selling bigger, but I couldn't because I was just like, I'm in fucking pain.
Right.
Like real pain.
Do you remember Steve-O when he came on WWE?
And he got fucking mauled. Yeah.
I think it was probably during I think they might have edited it out, but yeah. Umaga gave him something. I only know this because I was not watching WWE during this time because Steve-O was on it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything about Steve-O. I like yep. Jackass and Wild Boys. I think those are two of the funniest shows ever.
Yeah, man.
But if that's who's on your wrestling show,
yeah, man,
things aren't going well.
No, absolutely not.
But he gave him something. And so I've heard Steve-O talk about this. And he goes, I didn't realize that, you know, when they do a move, you're just supposed to stay down. And I kept popping up and giggling and stuff. And Umaga got pissed and mauled him and knocked him out eventually. I don't know if it was during the commercial break or whatever, but in a lot of ways, that's a natural reaction to a yeah. lot of the moves is if you're a civilian, if somebody were to give you a body slam, if you didn't get the wind knocked out of you, you'd probably pop right back up.
Yeah.
You know, just instinctually. I say the wind knocked out of you part because, when I was in high school in PE, we had a wrestling, you know, you go over various sports over the year. We had a wrestling day where they, you know, here's a hip toss, you know, whatever. And somebody gave me, I think it was a hip toss. It was something where I essentially just took a front bump.
Flip, yep.
You know, the guy flipped me and I landed flat back. And even though it was on a mat,
yep.
all of the wind left my chest.
Yep.
And I stopped breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I could not breathe for the life of me.
Yep.
It's the only time I've ever had that experience.
I've had a few times.
Oh, well, I mean, if you're in wrestling, you should probably have it a lot. That's yeah. the rough part. When you do take those, some and it was not even like something devastating. He did not try to kill me. He didn't flip me over with, you know, super duper aggression. I yep. just happened to hit in the right way where, you know, just everything came out of me and my muscles seized or something, yeah. you know, which I've done to somebody else. Here's a fun story. I had a buddy growing up. He was such a boastful, showboaty guy.
Gotcha.
And he had a new friend coming around.
Very braggadocious.
Yes. And he had a new friend coming over one day and he was trying to show how cool he was and how tough he was. And I was like, oh, whatever. And he's like, I kick your ass and everyone's ass. And I was like, no, you can't.
How old were you guys?
Oh, probably 16.
Okay. That's the age.
And I was like, no, the fuck you can. He's like, oh, yeah, whatever. Let's go outside right now. I bet I can lay you out. I was like, okay, let's do it. And as I left, I grabbed a pen. We went out into the street and he was, you know, he gets into his fighting position. He's in motion like he's Muhammad Ali, you know. This is one of my proudest moments. He's like, all right, let's go. And I threw the pen like 5 feet above his head. I just went, okay, let's go. And I threw the pen. And he did the dumbest, like, huh? You know, look straight up in the air.
Yep.
And I gave him everything I had right in the chest. Bow! Full fist right between the nips. And he doubles over. Whoa!
Yes.
And he goes, oh, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Oh, oh. And he stands up and he goes, you hit me right in the solar plexus.
Yeah.
It's just such a funny word to say.
It is.
You hit me in the solar plexus.
Yep. Ah! Yep.
But that's the only other time I've really seen it where it was confirmed, like, I can't breathe.
Yep. And that's the thing is that, man, it's just so funny. And then, like, there's sometimes I'll get hit and my reaction will be to giggle.
Right.
Like, also, like,
yeah.
And it, like, every match that I wrestle with RMB, I always end up bleeding from somewhere. Like,
nose, the ass, it's a good time in there.
Yeah. I've had him, like, early on. We were wrestling and I was teaming with Remy Marcel against Gregory Sharp and Clutch, and I wasn't legal. I was waiting for the tag. And while they were beating up Remy, Clutch came to knock me off the ring apron with a double axe handle, and his wrist bone hit me right in the hairline and just split it.
Jeez.
And everyone, anytime you see blood in wrestling,
right,
you have people that understand the industry. I'm like, oh, well, he cut himself. Or you have people that are cynics of the industry. I'm like, oh, it's fake.
Right.
And
it's a blood packet.
Yeah. And
that's always funny.
Yeah. And I was just gushing blood.
Right.
Like, I mean, just gushing blood. And I'm just like, nah, man, like, we got to keep going.
Sure. Work on this cut a little.
Yeah. And that was one of those things. Like, everyone's like, well, why did you cut yourself? I didn't fucking cut myself, dude. Yeah. Like, I took a wrist bone to the fucking hairline. Like,
man, there's all kinds of artful ways where you don't need a blade to open yourself up, whether it's at the hairline or at the eyebrow. You know, it's generally one of those kind of places, you know.
The only danger with the eyebrow is that it can spread so much larger than the initial contact.
Right.
Like, and then at that just, point.
Dude, just think about fucking Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton.
Yeah. Oh, the elbow.
Their last exchange.
Yeah, man.
You know, someone was probably like, hey, can you open them up? And he's like, yeah, I can do it. You know, because in mixed martial arts, I'm sure every mixed martial artist knows, like, yeah, if I throw straight elbows, you know, and hit a specific part of the head, I can open a motherfucker up, no sweat.
Absolutely.
And that's what he did. He went right for that hairline with the point of the elbow. And fucking about tore half of his scalp off.
Yep.
And on top of that, he's completely concussed out of his gourd because it took him a few cracks.
Yep.
So he just lied there and bled profusely.
Man,
it was enough for Chris Jericho backstage to go, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. And well, and unfortunately, man, like, I understand. Like, it goes back to the chair shot that Dillinger gave Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
And every now and again, though, when things, in my opinion, my job is to make people doubt for a second.
Yeah.
And even.
How about just doubt for the evening?
Yeah. On Twitter, there was some people that made comments about the match There was one in specific, and it was
like, you're not supposed to read those.
Well, I like to pay attention to what people are talking about, but it was somebody who normally doesn't watch FSW shows that ordered it to see some of the GCW guys on it.
Right.
And they posted some pictures from in the crowd because GCW is running today.
Right.
And
The FSW arena.
Not in the FSW arena, but they're using our ring. They rented a building downtown.
All right, fair enough.
And the comment they made, they're like, I don't know who they are, but they don't like each other.
Right.
And to me,
that's
goal.
That's a success.
Yes. And for the people that are listening to this, wrestling... everyone already knows what it is. And at this point, no one knows how the easiest way to defend it. But if you want to defend it, and if you're in the industry, make people think that you know what the fuck you're doing and that you don't like each other while you're doing it.
Turnbuckle Boogie is a Devo Looter production and is produced by TJ Fogarty and Cody Hancock, with music and web production by Timothy Styles. If you're interested in booking or information on Cutthroat Cody, please go to cutthroatcody.com and follow us on Instagram @turnbuckleboogie. See you next Monday.